All rights reserved, Steve Coleman and the Origami VanCast. The Origami VanCast is an audio podcast resource for the chronic pain patient and is for those who suffer from ill-defined, sometimes referred to as throwaway, diagnoses. Basically, if the cause of your disease is not well understood by current medicine, let me tell you about a couple of fundamental systems within your body that your doctor wasn't educated about in med school. These systems are the endocannabinoid system and the fascial systems, and both are the subject of current ongoing research. As a patient who has suffered due to the ignorance of both of these systems, I don't want anyone else to suffer unnecessarily. I quit my six-figure job designing lasers and moved into a van in order to finish curing myself, and now I feel obligated to try to highlight the new and important research in these fields, adding whatever value my experience might to the work of the scientists. Today on the VanCast, I'm going to get a little more into detail on the specific things that we can do in all three areas of pain, fascia, and cannabis. The show today is coming to you from Parowan Gap, Utah. It's a petroglyph site, but I'm here a day after having hiked 15 miles and to Kolob Arch in the west part of Zion National Park. And the last couple of weeks I have been hiking above 5 miles almost every other day, and running 2 to 5 miles every day, and also working out most days. So it's been a frenzy of activity. My body has just really taken off and done well, and I'm just so pleased and excited to share today's show with you. Chronic pain patients of the world, do you have your vision yet? In the last, short episode 8 and then the full episode of 8, I kind of detailed out how I wanted you to develop a vision for your wellness in the future, and then expanded upon that with a couple of other questions to prepare you for what would happen when you do start to achieve that vision. And I think you can achieve that vision, and my experience says that you can. But the first thing you'd have to do is develop it, and I know that inertia keeps you from doing it. So, if you haven't done that yet, I'm not happy with you. But there is something that you can do, and you can do right now, assuming that you're not driving, if you're at home. And I want you to do this. And this is going to be your first concrete step in making yourself get better. If you're a chronic pain patient, here you go. I want you to take off your shoes and stand up. Pause this if you need to, whatever you need to do, get some headphones on. Preferably find a place in your house that has a hard floor. I like linoleum or, a very flat tile. Something with a line, and 1 foot spacing is good. Something like that. This way you have something, sort of a grid to stand up on. So find a comfortable place, in your kitchen, your bathroom, mudroom, wherever you might be that has some tile or a hard flat surface. Take your shoes off. You can leave your socks on if you want. And then what I want you to do is 1 foot at a time, left foot or right foot first, doesn't matter. Take in place both, so you have a ball on your foot at the big toe and then the ball at the pinky toe. And what we want to do is take both of those and place them on a line. And then once you've done that, at about a distance of a foot apart or whatever is comfortable shoulder length for you, take your other foot and do the same thing. Line up the two balls of that foot, the two forward balls, the big toe and the pinky toe, on that same line. So now your feet should be apart at shoulder width, and you're standing there with the balls of your feet lined up on this line. And just slowly rock forward on your toes just a little bit to distribute your weight forward, and then come back down onto your heels and center up. And try and center your ankles in each foot. You should feel as your heel touches the ground, there are two balls that are rather close together there in the back. And we would like to line those up as well. And if you look down at your feet, you should be able to see that they look straight, they're parallel. You're not duck foot or whatever. However you are, We need to observe this. Okay. And I really take your attention and focus it into your feet and feel your ankle pushing down on to the assembly of bones and soft tissue that are your foot. And feel the balance and really feel how your weight is distributed between your two feet. And try and focus a lot of intention in there and see how the weight is distributed on the four balls, the two up front on a line and the two at the heel of each foot. And the ideal goal here is that all four balls on each foot are weighted evenly. But I don't think this is going to be very common for people. It certainly, I mean, I didn't even have four balls on the foot whenever I first did this, the foot that has the rod in it, which you just heard pop, maybe. So what happened to me when I did this for the first time, it was in an online or a YouTube yoga video. I noticed that I was not feeling at all what the yoga instructor was describing. My leg didn't feel like, my foot didn't feel like that at all on the ground. And the reason why I'm telling you this is to see if you feel something similar. If, you know, if you feel all 8 points equally weighted, you know, you're probably in great health and probably not in a lot of pain. But I would venture that if you have especially a throwaway chronic pain type diagnosis, then you may not. Now, what I noticed, and my right leg has a rod in it, and it was, you know, very severely distorted, as it turns out, from being put back together on a table and then, you know, healing up, convalescing while I was basically, you know, lying down. And then not getting much physical therapy, really any physical therapy at all afterward, and just started kind of walking on it and kind of making it work. And not very well. But what I could begin to feel when I really started focusing on this were lines of tension and just sort of like having a tight muscle, but in directions that don't really make a lot of sense. Like what I was sensing, I guess, was all of the bound up that, in my case, the tibialis anterior, which is a muscle on the front of the lower leg, was extremely fibrotic, I guess, or just bound and flat and had no ability to move whatsoever. It was frozen to the bone. I had to break it loose in the course of many weeks. And as I did, I gained a lot of foot mobility. The arches to my feet, or at least to my right foot, it was flat before and very thin. And both of my feet actually have begun to plump up and very much change shape with lots of cracking and popping. And this rearranges that distribution of the balls on the foot. Now, I do this assessment of the eight balls, balancing those all the time. This is my primary exercise. This is the way that I evaluate myself. This is the way that I feel, you know, how my fascia is feeling in the morning as far as adhesions go. So there's a few tips as far as doing it. If you can't feel the four balls very well, one of the best things that you can do is just lift your toes on that foot or on both feet. Just roll them up. Now, when I first started, I wasn't physically capable of that because I had so many adhesions. And actually, I didn't have the flexibility or proprioception in my toes to do a lot of things. And so I did have some other exercises that I picked up off a very good YouTube channel. I believe that channel is called Grown Healthy, and what I'm going to do are link a few videos to it that helped me as far as helping to loosen up these ankles. The treatment with the proteolytic enzymes anyway, a lot of people have just taken those systemically and that I know, and a lot of them, like, you know, probably close to 10 have reported increased ankle flexibility. And I don't think that this is a coincidence, and I don't think that it is a small thing. It's a small thing to maybe a person that is not severely injured, but I think it's a good indicator for what actually happens. Well, That's my hypothesis. I should say that these are hypotheses, right? This is just kind of my experience and what I'm thinking. So definitely, you know, if you have poor ankle flexibility, if you don't have good balance and that sort of thing, then I'm definitely not surprised you're in chronic pain, because that certainly matches my experience. So let's talk about that a little bit. Let's switch to the fascia section, which I guess, I'm not going to call it stretchy bits, I don't think. I really, when I did the last show, I came up with the pain meat weed thing, and I kind of like that. So I think we're just going to call the fascia section meat, M-E-A-T, for now. And I did a little more research on the tensegrity and it model. And basically, yeah, we have, pre-stressed tension members, which would be the fascial elements, or say guy wires in like a bridge type construction. Maybe tensegrity for a bridge is not the right description, but the floating triangles and that sort of thing. So if these fascial adhesions, they change the way that your bones are positioned, and they seem to be, related to injury, right? So what I seem to be experiencing is that there is sort of a unique distortion of the skeleton that accommodates all these fascial adhesions. In particular, the metatarsals and tarsals and the cervical vertebrae, these are sort of at either end of the tension members of the structure of this. If you imagine your body's built, something like a suspension bridge, where it's anchored to the ground with all the guy wires and everything, and the top of those are obviously up at your head. So what I'm saying is that I think as we accumulate injuries and sedentary periods and just injure our fascias over time, as the fascia desiccates and accommodates and scars up and does whatever it does, shortens, loses movement, it changes the way the skeleton interacts with itself. So every little individual joint kind of starts operating at a different angle, gets pulled out of whack, and so on and so forth. And I really, the reason why I'm saying this is because it correlates directly with my experience. And especially, I would say this third phase, I would say that in my healing, it's really kind of been divided up into like three, 10 to 12 month phases, of which I'm in the third one right now, sort of at the end of the third one, or maybe even a little bit beyond. But it seems like the distortion, all of those adhesions in the fascia, largely end up in misshaping the foot, the feet. And there is often a correlating distortion up in my cervical spine. And it is quite common for me, and almost a daily occurrence each morning whenever I'm stretching for a few hours these days, that I will be working. I make progress every day. I don't redo a lot of things these days. Nothing's re-sticking. I'm just sort of straightening all the bones out. And I'm really right at the very end. But it's like there is a code imprinted in the tarsals and metatarsals and in the cervical vertebrae that corresponds to a given distortion. And as you work it out, I can sort of work a wrinkle out of one of the layers of fascia, and this will rotate around, say, the deformity in my spine at like T12L1. That took several weeks of working on it each day. but lots of these changes in my cervical spine and the foot, there may be some distortion that comes about while I sleep and that sort of thing. I've been doing these treatments for 3 years where I feel like I have been loosening up my fascia to where I can move it around my body. And this also comes with the ability to feel that, because the fascial layers are innervated and they're so heavily involved in proprioception that you really can. I mean, I feel them as my joints. Everything that I have always thought was my joints, that's actually been my fascia. You know, it's been interesting to try and undo this code in my feet, you know, which will also, you know, sometimes I'll be focusing on those eight balls and I'll feel a little line of tension sort of go up my calf or whatever, and I'll kind of do a little bit of a stretch on my fib kind of area to kind of stretch them apart in a certain way or whatever. And the next thing you know, you're like, my foot, two bones in my foot will pop, and then I'll feel something in my neck and then, you know, have a really sharp, like, snap. Not super painful, but not extra nice. I mean, most of these fascial tearing and things, most of the fascial tearing, most of the fascial manipulation that I've had to go through was either, you know, pretty tolerable pain or pretty unique feeling. Certainly there are things that I've done. There are plenty. There's probably, you know, many months worth of stretching that was exceedingly painful. Definitely there are things that I had to do that probably weren't advisable to be in that level of pain. But I got through it, and a lot of them were kind of one-way streets or didn't need to be repeated too many times. So that was good. But I guess I'm trying here in this fascia section just kind of wrap your head around the ramifications of having this full-body system and then also having it be diseased or at least misshapen. Correcting it is not necessarily painless, and you know, it's not a one-off thing. It's global, and it is. I eventually have gotten a feel for it, but so I think that's good for the fascia section today. And I think today, you know, let's talk about: did you go get weed yet? Did you go buy some weed? What will you do when you do? So first, you know, if you listen to the last show, I give you a few recommendations. I definitely would recommend that you go buy several. I would say at least six, but if you can get 12 different strains, 12 different things to try, even if it's just 12 different pre-rolls of different kinds. You know, I think even if you don't have test results, or if they're very bare bones test results, and all you can do is just get one that's high in THC, one's mid in THC, and then one's high in CBD, that kind of thing, I would try and do them that way. The other thing, you know, that I look for, if you can get some that's kind of like old, you know, hey, do you guys have anything that's old? Those tend to be high in CBN. So like 1 year old weed that, you know, might be on special or something. Also 1 year old concentrates. And I don't know if you saw the Instagram post for the VanCast yesterday, but I posted something about a cake batter that I bought in Las Vegas, which is a consistency of extract. And the way that they get it to have that consistency is that they incorporate air. What I have found is that those also tend to be a little better for me. So if you are looking for concentrates, maybe you should look at one that is a cake batter consistency, because that, I think, you know, probably that extra oxygen in there when you dab it actually seems to maybe do something. I don't know. Maybe convert it more to the THCA to THC, or maybe convert the THC that's in there to CBN. But the goal here is to get... I'm sitting here making all this noise. The goal here is to get a bunch of different things to try. And if you're just going to try it once, just smoke one joint and call it your experiment and that's it, that's probably not going to be helpful for you. Even if you got a 5-pack of each one, if you're smoking an entire joint each time, I don't think that's going to be helpful. That's also kind of a little more recreational, because even a 500 milligram joint's kind of a lot for a dose of flower, unless, I mean, it would be where I was at the upper level of CBG when I was using flower. Like I said before, you know, go and try and buy all the different cannabinoids you can get, find out about your test results, and have a plan when you go to the dispensary if you don't already. Have a scale when you come back if you're using flower. Maybe have a really good scale if you're using concentrates. Maybe not, though, because, you know, measuring a milligram can be kind of tough. So if you're using small doses. I at one point wanted to give you ideas for, okay, what if I live in a state or there? It's very common when you go to a dispensary that maybe they even have test results, but they don't have the product that you need. They're out of it, or they just sold the last one. You know, this is not a, typically you don't have tons and tons of any given product. So it's good to kind of have like a plan in your back pocket when they don't have what you want, because you looked at weed maps, you know, 3 hours ago and everyone came in on lunch and bought all that stuff or had a special or something, you know, and now you're there and they don't have what you want. So just for general purposes, if we're talking about, you know, doing the kind of things that I've done, what has responded best for me, one strain that you can get pretty much in any dispensary somehow is Blue Dream. And Blue Dream, you know, it's one of the most successful strains there is, but also it is, in my experience, one of the most helpful. Now, there are some other blue ones that seem to be a little bit better. I can get into that, but I think in general, you know, if you try and stick to something that's a little more Blue Dreamy related, that's a good place to start. All right, so I'm going to give you a list of strains, and I'll write this out in the show notes too, that are going to be, at least in my opinion, these are CBG-centric strains. So not all marijuana ends up creating CBG. It is pretty doggone hard to find in most dispensaries, although it is becoming much more available now. And in fact, it is being sold in CBD stores this year, especially 2021 and beyond. I think in America, it will be pretty easy to get CBG products similar to CBD. I don't know how well they'll be tested. I've certainly been buying them off of the internet for like a year, mostly isolate myself. But again, we're talking about strains of marijuana that you will get at a dispensary here. And I'm going to kind of give you the most specific and most potent strains first that have helped me. And then it'll kind of go to less specific and more things that you should either avoid. So I have some opposites on here. And just things to look out for. Now, with doing experiments with marijuana, I'm not guiding you to the effects or what you should take as a dose or anything like that. I'm gonna let you figure that out as for now. But what I want to tell you to do is kind of what to use and then how to compare them. So let's get with the list here. So I think the best one overall, if you can get it, is a strain called Green Crack, or it's also known as Green Kush. Kush being spelled with a C instead of a K in this case. And it's a quite potent strain, and it tends to be high in CBG in my experience. another one that's high in CBG is a strain called AK-47. That is the original one that I found that broke up my neck. So when I wrote that story on LinkedIn, that was from AK-47. Panama Red is a strain, it's an old strain, that a lot of people, you know, recognize from the 70s, but it is a strain that I used for well over a year, and it's what I discovered first began, well, it and another one I'll talk about here in just a second. Like I said before, Blue Dream is one. There is another one, I don't know, this is grown by my local dispensary, and it was kind of grown on accident. They call it Blueberry Cobbler, and this one was really interesting. It is the lowest THC strain that I've ever had that still does what I need it to do. It is a four parts CBD to one part THC flower. It's, well, I'm just being rough here, but it's about 7% THC and something like 20, you know, maybe 3 to 1, 21 to 24 grams or percent of CBD. Another old one that is good for CBG, in my experience, is Pineapple Express. Durban Poison is another one that is good for CBG. One of the better ones, I think, but I've only tried it once, but it certainly worked well, was a strain called Alaskan Thunderfuck. That's just what it's named. I'm not cursing. So now we kind of get into, you know, if you go, you're going to go to most dispensaries and they're going to tell you, okay, we don't have any of those, or we can get you one Blue Dream, or we have Blue Dream in a consistency that you don't want, or it's in a vape cartridge that you don't have something for, or whatever. Okay, so now what do you do? So in my experience, these are less specific, but, you know, they'll get you somewhere. Anything that is a super sour or a sour, those tend to be pretty good for CBG in my experience. Anything that is a lemon, and certainly like a super lemon or super lemon haze or just lemon haze, those tend to be good. Anything with a strong smell of lemon, but you do have to be careful, like with concentrates, that a lot of places now are adding terpenes and they add limonene and make it smell like lemon. It's a very cheap thing to do, and they can cover up some stanky weed that way. So just be aware. Another one would be, you know, if you just have sativa, that is a pretty wide label to put on something. But if you can get one that's like a blue sativa or a sour sativa or something like that, that might be useful for you. Strawberry Cough is another strain that's good. OG Kush is another strain that's good. Northern Lights is a question. That's maybe. I still don't know about that one. And even in a, now this is the most generic thing maybe that I have, is if I was just going to go look purely by THC content and maybe a little bit of CBD, what the best that you can look for generally from just those two numbers, that's all you have, is THC and CBD. I would look for something that's between 16 and about 25, 26% THC. And I would try to find something with less than, you know, about half a percent of CBD. So just a little bit of CBD in there, not zero. If you can find it, you know, not 0.0, but 0.2, I would go ahead and get something like that, especially if it's a lemon or a sour or something blue. All right. Now, I want to tell you that in my experimentation with marijuana, especially early on, I actually had a few that amplified my pain. And in fact, the very first strain that I bought from a commercial dispensary was GG4. And it was recommended by the bud tender there. And so it was one of the, you know, like first 20 that I bought. It was the first one that I tried. And I think I probably took about 35 milligrams of it in a one-hitter kind of thing. And it amplified my pain. It brought me from like a level 5 to a level 7 or something. And it's really miserable when that happens, and it's scary. So that wasn't the first time. I'd actually had that happen before with another strain called White Widow. So I stay away from the strains White Widow and Gorilla Glue. I stay away from anything. When someone tells me, oh, this one gives a strong body high, I'm very careful with it. Most of the time I don't use those. That is your list of CBG-centric strains. Now, if you go get a bunch of those in whatever form, what are you going to do? Well, if you work or, you know, have limited free time, you're going to have to find some time to do these experiments. I would get a, you know, something like a computation notebook or some kind of notebook to start keeping notes in. And, you know, as someone who's kept an engineering notebook for the last, over 20 years. It's the importance is not that you write down everything. What is important is the quality of your notes, and that you, if you're going to go back and look at them and use them. So what's important, you know, I think, and what you should do is kind of come up with an experimental plan. Like, hey, I think this is going to do this, or I want to take this strain because of this. Just form some hypotheses. This is the scientific method. And so the first thing that you need to do is say, okay, I think this strain of marijuana is going to help my pain. Maybe that's, and I would recommend if you're a chronic pain patient, that's what we should start off with, right? Let's try and deal with your pain. Now, the strain list that I gave you isn't really so good for pain. It's really more, that's more for CBG. But I'll say that the lemons and the sativas and generally the high THC type stuff in the 20 to 25%, especially in my experience, red fruits, and especially that fruit being a strawberry, and especially the other fruit being lemon or some kind of cross between strawberry cough and lemon haze. There was one called strawberry lemonade that for me, I could take 35 milligrams, which is a tiny little, it's like two puffs, once a day, and it gave me as much pain relief as fentanyl. And I was very happy to have that strain. I have since bought some shatter of that in Oklahoma City in another batch, and maybe headed a couple other places, and it is extremely heady. It's definitely not for everybody, and you need to be, yeah, let's talk about that. So as far as being high is a side effect. At least it is for me. I'm not saying it's not enjoyable, especially when you're first coming out of pain and you get a mental break from the THC. It's very helpful, I know. But we kind of need to ignore that. We need to put it out of our mind, and it will be problematic in the beginning until you get used to it, and that's why I recommend you set some time apart to just be high and get used to being high. This is one of those things. If you're one of those people that say, I can't smoke weed, well, you got to keep trying. If this was another pill, it would be the same thing. You would have to keep trying. You have to adjust your dose. You have to figure out how to take it. And that's exactly what I had to do. I hated marijuana for the first couple of months. And even like after about 1 year, you know, I got to when I was getting a pretty heavy doses of flower, I would cough so bad and just almost throw up even after a bong hit, you know, and it was miserable. Or I would get a respiratory infection and I'm trying to smoke this stuff. This is not a recreational situation. This is us trying to heal ourselves. And whenever you get on the right path, you know, when you can't take your medicine because you can't breathe or whatever, then it's just like not being able to take your medicine for any other reason because the pharmacy didn't have it or whatever. You can end up in a lot of pain. You can have a lot of trouble. So by going down this road and by buying, you know, this marijuana and starting to experiment on yourself, I don't want to be light about this. You need to prepare for going through, you know, some heavy duty stuff. You're going to feel strange things. You are going to maybe taste strange things. You may not have a good time on marijuana, and so you do need to take responsibility for yourself and for, you know, handling these experiments and for handling yourself. But in particular, I want to caution you, if you have some worries about mental illness or are particularly concerned about that, then I think you owe it to yourself to do some research and make sure that you have a good understanding of the risks of using cannabis with regards to mental illness. And of course, the main recommendation that you will get from almost everyone in the cannabis world is to start low and go slow, and that is also my recommendation. Start low, go slow, be experimental, record your results, use a variety of cannabis so that you can discern the differences real time. Don't use up one lot of it and then go to a different lot and then to a different bag and just keep your stash at one kind at a time. You won't be able to discern differences in this way. And I want to encourage you to both experience the differences and also really become attuned with them to where you kind of understand what might be going on and how they affect you, both in terms of the strain and the dosage. You have to be your own guide. All right. What I would say then is, once you've got your strains all picked out, get yourself a little one hitter or something. Sometimes they call these a bat, you know. And so this is good for taking like little 35 milligram doses, roughly. You know, these are kind of easy, simple things. But as far as like getting a lay of the land when you first start experimenting with all these different strains, it's a good way to do it. You know, like try one, then, you know, wait 20, 30 minutes or however long, you know, minimum to start trying them and discerning the difference between them. Their effects will start stacking on top of each other and you won't be able to discern them as much. But in the beginning, we're just looking to take, you know, a small dose and kind of get a feel. But I would standardize it. I would try and make it 20 milligrams of each one, or 25 milligrams or 35 or whatever it is, so that you know, oh, this one's a lot stronger than this one, whatever. You can't just tell from the test results, okay? It does not work like one that's 25% THC is not, you know, five times stronger as one that's 5% THC. It does not work that way. So don't think that way and just go ahead and weigh your doses and say, okay, I'm going to take 35 milligrams of, you know, Blue Dream. I'm going to take 35 milligrams of Strawberry Cough. And write down some notes of what you observe, in particular with your pain and your flexibility. Stand up. And what I was saying in the beginning of the pain section, you know, feel the balls of your feet, lift your toes, stand on your tiptoes, rotate back and forth, and find those eight balls of your feet, and find the balls of your feet, and then find the lines of tension, and then see, you know, take a puff off of your joint and see if you can feel any differently or how you notice it. You know, I'm not trying to be prescriptive here, and I'm not giving you the full description of maybe what you might feel. But what is important here is that you begin taking steps to actually change yourself to get better. If you think that, even if I have, let's say that this is a cure and that exactly what has worked for me is going to help you, it is not going to work that your life will stay exactly the same. You will be pain-free. You'll have this medication and you'll go on about your business. Think about it really. Your pain is a major factor in your life. And when it is gone, your life will be very significantly different. It will be different in a way that you will not really be able to thoroughly, reliably understand until you get there. So that needs to be the expectation, and that means there's going to be a lot of change going on when you do get better. So expect that, and I don't think you'll be disappointed. So there's two other expectations that I needed to set, even though this show's going a little bit long, but I kind of wanted to at least start to put these in here. The first is an expectation that you're going to have to go through more pain to get better. And when I originally recorded this, I actually broke down because I know whenever I was at my maximum pain, for me to imagine going to any more pain was traumatic and very scary. And there was a certain point when I had just begun discovering all this that actually trying, you know, engaging with what that pain used to be and remembering it actually made me, you know, kind of hysterical, actually, fearing that it would come back. But I did get away from it. And I want to tell you the way that I think about pain right now. The way that I see pain is that it is a warning to your body. It is a warning from your body to your consciousness telling you that something is wrong. And it is the job of your consciousness to figure out what is wrong. It's not necessarily what hurts. It's probably more likely something that you're doing. But you know the old adage that it doesn't take any more pain and you get all the gain in the world, right? So that's what we're looking at here. Not really. But I do want to say that in my experience, it's not that much more pain, but it is a different pain, and you do need to push yourself, and you need to exercise and push through the pain. And that gets me to the second point, and that is the care and feeding of your new body. Your current body, you're not taking good care of. If you were, you wouldn't be in chronic pain. And or if you could, you wouldn't be in chronic pain. Now, I'm not saying that's your fault. It doesn't really matter what cause or effect is, does it? If you're not taking care of your body, you're not eating a good diet, you're not having a healthy exercise regime, you're not in a healthy place mentally, all of these things need to change for you to get better. These are things that you definitely need to add to your list and work on. These are things that will prevent you from getting better. So, you know, you need to be considering how you're going to take care of your diet. How are you even, you know, hey, with the job that you work or whatever it is that you do, how are you going to maintain this new healthy diet? But I want you to think about the care and feeding of your healthy body along with all of these other things. And this is just another example of the sort of thing that is going to change your life. And it may not seem like something that you want to change for right now, but I would strongly, you know, recommend to you that you recognize that there are many things that you can do to be healthier. And once you start taking those on and you get a little bit healthier from this and a little bit healthier from that and a little bit less pain from this and a lot less pain from that and so on and so forth, you find out that just like any project or any large task that you're doing, it's just the summation of all the small parts. And we got to take care of all those small things that we've let slip through our fingertips to let our bodies get into this condition where they're in so much pain, where our body the whole time is telling us, look, Steve, something is wrong. You need to figure this out. You need to stop what you are doing, focus your attention on this pain, and rectify it. And that is what I'm trying to get you to do so that you can move your life forward. As a chronic pain patient and a recovered chronic pain patient like me, come out here on the road and join me. Let's go for a run. I look forward to it. And if you don't have a vision yet, I really want you to go back and really focus on one. Maybe just write down in words, get it all figured out, and then start finding, you know, a picture that you can put it to, that you can put to those words, or even drawing a picture that you can put to those words. But you need to come up with a vision of being better. And if you didn't stand up at the beginning of this, or you're in your car or whatever, come back and do that exercise and begin to make it your reference point for how your body feels. And I think you will begin to feel the way your fascia is in your body. Chronic pain patients of the world, I'm going to start being hard on you because I know that it takes an extraordinary amount of motivation to help you overcome your pain. So I want to help you see your own slothful laziness. I want you to see and think about how much more you could do if only you would take a little more pain, if only you would turn off the television, if only you would stand up and feel 8 balls on your feet. I know many of you have not done that yet. And I really invite you to take the first step in potentially healing yourself and certainly understanding yourself better. And, you know, again, our problems don't have to be any more than both having been in pain, as far as I'm concerned, to sort of have overlap, because it's been a full body, full mind, full life experience, all-consuming. And obviously, you know, for me, you know, maybe it can be less consuming for you. But I want you to be prepared for what happens. You know, not that it's the same for everyone, but in a sense that it is, in that it is change that we have to adapt to. And that's the first part of understanding what getting better really means. It means change, and there's no way around it. And so it's best to guide that change in a direction that is toward your life goals. So I invite you to really create the vision, to really begin to work on your body and invest in it like the temple for your soul that it is.